Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, join us as we explore heart health and homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck, with Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go.
Hello, everyone. This is Debbie Bruck from homeopathyworldcommunity.com, and we're getting ready for Thanksgiving to be thankful for every single thing that we have, the good things, even the bad things, the little things and the big things. And I personally have been having some challenges, especially today and yesterday, since the website has not been actually working so well. That's what happens when your servers decide that they're going to transfer over and remake themselves, and then the people who are using that server have to learn a whole new method and get into the back dashboard and do some changes in order to get everything running smoothly. But I am wishing everyone a wonderful holiday, a Thanksgiving feast, and whether this is you're going to be eating turkey or whether you're going to be eating all vegetarian, it's going to be the most important part of the holiday is getting together with family and friends and being thankful. Again, maybe saying a couple of words of wisdom, some prayers, something that is going to be meaningful in your life. And so today, what is happening is that I have just received a message from Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, my regular co-host on this day, Wednesday morning at 10:30 on Eastern Time, USA. He's normally calling in from India, and he's having some internet trouble. So I don't know whether this is the world's messages to me to say you have to keep persevering, you have to figure out solutions, or you're on your own. Whatever the thing is that's going on, it means that we can still, thank God, we still have the communication. We still have the internet running and the electricity, whereas there are people in the world who don't have this information, who aren't able to connect because their power is down and they have to deal with life circumstances, natural disasters, and even war. So I have put on the chat for anybody who's interested in visiting with me today. You can call in to speak to the host at 347-945-6956. Or you can use your Skype and click the blue button and give me a call, and I will look in the dashboard to see if there is anybody there visiting with me. In the meantime, typically I'll just give a refresher to what we usually do on this program. We have Dr. Adil, who is our expert homeopath, and he fields questions from around the world and answers them completely and thoroughly. for whether you are a lay homeopath or you are just a person who's interested in learning about homeopathy and have a personal health question, or you are a professional physician and homeopath who is having a difficult case or wants to ask about theory or philosophy. Dr. Adil is your man. He is the guru and will answer your questions. So, unfortunately, we have this situation with internet connection, and therefore you can always send us your questions ahead of time. We will do our best to answer them. The other thing that we typically do is there's usually a master, a historical figure, who we give a little bit of information about. And it was supposed to be Dr. Stuart Close today. And Dr. Stuart Close was a famous homeopath who has written and contributed to our knowledge base of homeopathy. And he was from Wisconsin, born in 1860 in an English family. He was the son of David and Sophronia Wells Close, the eldest of the, they had three children, and he was the eldest son. He received his education in the country district schools and by private reading and study. He remained on his father's farm until he was 14 years old. And in 1874, the family moved to California and settled in the Napa City, where young Dr. Close was occupied with learning on his own. And he also went to study law and became a lawyer. Then after his father died in 1879, and he was many years the leading homeopathic, his mother married Dr. Pitman Dinsmore, who was a leading homeopathic physician in San Francisco. And that's how Dr. Close became interested in the subject. So we're going to probably learn a lot more about him when Dr. Adil is able to join us. And I have put on the internet a number of quotes that he has spoken about in his writings, because he has provided many, many lectures and essays on the topic of homeopathic philosophy, things that relate to us today in terms of challenges with life, with war and peace seems to be an important topic, and how leaders and figures historically play a part and how they are challenged to overcome obstacles. And he even lists Moses, Luther, Washington, Lincoln, Plato, Bacon, Hippocrates, or Hahnemann, that each of them did have life challenges, people who opposed them and people who will continue to oppose ideas that are out of the mainstream, that challenge authority, that do not seem to fit with certain logic or belief systems that are going on in the time. So all of those people, leading figures, were ahead of their time. And in order to understand what they are saying, you have to open your mind to and begin to question authority. In the meantime, we're going to also, I'd like to let you know that you can always join us on Facebook, Homeopathy World Community. And we also have we have the main website, homeopathyworldcommunity.com. And when you go there, we have the main page where you can see upcoming events that we're going to have, such as our shows on usually on Thursday at noon with Alan Phillips and Vaccination Rights. We're going to take a break for Thanksgiving this week, and then we're going to probably have Greg Glazer on, who is a lawyer from California. On Monday, we're going to have a new show with, that's the Health In show, on homeopathy world community. But that takes us to our live stream video. And our live stream video show comes off of Nissan Communications. And we're going to, each week you'll see some new banners up on the front. We just had this past Monday, the Refusers songwriter, singer, guitarist, and outspoken vaccine rights advocate. And he really knows his stuff. He knows the facts about what happens with side effects and neurological damage when you're talking about vaccinations. And he's up on current events also. So he has even testified before Congress regarding the vaccines and their adverse reactions. That was Monday. And you can always see the archives by going to Homeopathy World Community. There's the groups there. So if you look down the right-hand column, you're going to see the book, The Solution, which is Homeoprophylaxis. Kate Birch and Scylla Watcott are the authors of that book, and they're going to be given a second program for those who are interested in doing some kind of action, taking care of yourself and your kids. Rather than using the vaccination program, you might be interested in learning about using homeopathic remedies to boost the immune system, especially in this season when we are talking about influenza coming into play due to the low lighting and the short days, not enough sunlight, not enough vitamin D in the system. You want to make sure that you get outside even in the colder weather so that you get your sun, but you also want to learn about remedies such as anticipation remedies, fear-based remedies, and remedies like influenzinum and acylococcinum, which are specifically for nosodes for the influenza. And the beautiful thing about homeopathy is these remedies can be used every year. You don't necessarily have to make up a new batch, although some companies will make one, let's say for H1N1. They will make it for the new strain of virus that is going around. But in actuality, homeopathy is based on the principle of similars, which means that one strain should be similar enough to the symptoms and expression of the disease so that it would cover whatever annual flu strain virus comes out. Then we have a special from Miranda Castro, a discount code on Homeopathy World Community, and she might only have one more day of an awesome special for Thanksgiving on a number of her wonderful items. She's got cell salts, she has lip balm, and she has her innovative creams for joint pain and skin issues. Then the other thing, we have Homeopathy World, which is Mary Aspinwall. She has her kits and remedies, and she has created a bunch of kits that are convenient for home use to put in your car, your garage, your house, your camp, wherever you are. And finally, we have Complete Dynamics in Homeopathy. That is a computer program which I enjoy using. It's always updated, and the latest version is on your desktop. They have all different kinds of programs that you can join. If you're a student, they've got a special deal. So if you just click Complete Dynamics in Homeopathy on the Homeopathy World Community website, you will get that information. And now I would also like to let folks know that Anna Vervarchek is been doing a walk for a month now. We had her on the show and interviewed her. She has written about 10 different blogs. Take a look and see the journey that she's going through. If you want to give her send her an email, give her a phone call, get in touch with her, and maybe she'll stop by in your neck of the woods and you will be able to have her host her and feed her a meal and chat and study together. That would be a real treat for you. Dr. Usmani has written a new story, a new blog called License to Shoot. And this is a personal situation that a client that he had, a patient, had some symptoms that were difficult to understand. He says that they were rheumatic in nature. And he said that there were the patient said there were electric-like waves running from the upper extremities to the lower body, up to the calves, and on moving or turning his neck in any direction, he would get this lightning-like pain that would travel to his hips or calves. He also said that sometimes on raising one arm or other, he would have a shooting wave of lightning-like pain that would travel like a spark in the clouds and spreads into the many branches at the end. The pain would shoot from shoulder to lumbosacral region, and from there it would spread in fine waves throughout the gluteal region. The same feelings in the gluteal region and hips would be experienced when the patient was sitting or on rising from sitting. This patient was truly miserable, and he needed help with his arthritis. So you can see, homeopathically, we can do something with these types of symptoms. We can listen to the sensations and search in our repertory listing of symptoms to find out what remedy might be appropriate, a sub millimum that could help this poor soul who was having so much trouble with standing and stooping and sitting and raising his arms. And so the story that he's telling you was that the gentleman went to the orthopedic specialist for some kind of help with this problem. He ended up getting a diagnosis of frozen shoulder. And the doctor asked some interesting questions about whether he had a urinary problem or whether he had burning or with or without diabetes. And then finally, interestingly, the doctor said, how long have you had this frequency of urination? Because the gentleman said that he had a urinary problem. The answer was, he said, since childhood. I always rise 3 to 4 times at night to urinate since childhood. So the doctor gave a prescription that he would get from the pharmacy. The patient was told that he was going to give him a shot of long-acting steroid in the joint of his left shoulder. And so there he was in the office. He got the skin was cleaned, and he had the needle put into his joint, and it happened very quickly. I guess the patient did not have time to even inquire and wonder what was going on and ask why he was getting this shot. But whatever happened, it was quickly. And the diagnosis from the orthopedic surgeon was left shoulder 50% frozen plus a UTI, urinary tract infection. His prescription included ciprofloxacin, an antibiotic, 500 milligrams to be taken 200 times a day. And again, the same antibiotic, 200 milligrams per day for 4 days, and cyclophenac sodium, and a gel, a liniment for the shoulder, plus mecobalamin. So all of these heavy-duty antibiotics and pain relievers were given.
And the thing that is very unusual, if you go to a homeopath, you know that you sit there for a good while discussing what is going on with your problems. And in this situation, the patient told Dr. Usmani that there was no discussion at all. It was just the question answer about a couple of pains and then a diagnosis and then an injection and a prescription. So Dr. Usmani's wondering, on reading the prescription, where did the doctor figure out that that was a UTI? I mean, considering the fact that the patient was in his late 60s and he had had the same urinary situation his entire life, why would it be called an infection? And why would he get an injection of steroids? So I guess it all baffles the mind and wonders how this is considered doctoring, being a good physician, when you basically just give drugs that is going to relieve pain without getting to the etiology, without getting to really what is the base and cause and root of the person's sudden pain. And you can read through his article there and figure out, you know, I wrote a little comment on this, that a person really does need a second or third opinion when they go for something of this nature. And also be considerate of what are your going to be your side effects from taking drugs, because it might lead down the path from one drug needing another drug and so on. We have Dr. Amit Kakare, who has written about a case of constipation in a gentleman after, in someone after the death of a parent. So it was a young girl, 23 years old. And the question is, you know, the mind-body connection is very, very strong. And homeopaths make that connection and understand that whatever happens in your life can be the trigger, the stressor for physical symptoms. And we were learning about that in our reading of Dr. Herbert Roberts, who we're going to continue to read today, because we're on that journey of reading all of his chapters, and I think that he has so much to teach us. Also, if you're interested, I've put up there about Alzheimer's and how are we approaching this disease, which typically there is no cure, no really good method of preventing dementia, this form of dementia, this disease. And just to let you know that an estimated 4% who are under 65 years of age have Alzheimer's, 6% are 65 to 74 years of age. 44% of those with Alzheimer's are in the range of 75 to 84% four years old, and 46% are 85 or older. So as we're aging out, the boomers are aging out, our parents are getting older, and we notice ourselves this loss in mental function. So what do we do? And it's a matter of taking personal responsibility for our health and eating the right foods and being careful that we don't put certain things into our body that could cause problems. And one of those things, the vaccines that cause inflammation and neurological damage, that could break the chain of our nerve cells and cause untold damage over time, or immediate damage in susceptible, sensitive individuals. We're going to go ahead now and do a little bit of our reading from The Principles and Art of Cure by Homeopathy. The author is Herbert A. Roberts, M.D. And I think that we were up to finishing, I'm going to give you a summary of Chapter 6 of the Fundamental Laws, which are, and if you have not heard the past shows, go back and listen. Basically, the homeopathic laws are as follows. The law of cure is similia similibus curentur. Cure takes place from above downward, from within outward, from the more important to the less important organ, and in reverse order of the onset of symptoms. So you're going to notice that if you are healing from any kind of illness, you're going to notice this is the pattern. And if it's not going in this pattern, then you're probably not getting better. You're probably just going into a chronic state, a chronic condition. But if you see that, oh yeah, you know, you started off with watery, burny eyes, and so the last thing that's going to leave are those watery, burny eyes. Or if you started off with sneezing, you might end up with sneezing at the last thing. Once that's gone, Gesundheit, you're going to be getting better. The homeopathic law of action is that action and reaction are equal and opposite, which basically falls into fundamental laws of physics, that the amount of force is going to have to be balanced on the other side. Then we have the homeopathic law of quantity and dose. The quantity of the drug required is going to be in the inverse relation to the similarity. Thus, if it's really similar, you're going to need a very minute, infinitesimal amount of energy in order to remove those problems. The homeopathic law of quantity, the quantity of action necessary to affect any change in nature is the least possible. The decisive amount is always a minimum, an infinitesimal amount. So basically, if you are a good pattern matcher, if you have figured out what is the similimum, the remedy that is going to be the most effective, if it's going to be the most effective, you need the least amount in order to be effective, to make the greatest change. Because if you push too hard on anything, if you push too hard against anybody, they're going to push back against you with that same kind of force. So you only need a teeny tiny little bit, an infinitesimal amount, if you have a similimum, if you have similius similibus curentur. The homeopathic law of quality. The quality of the action of a homeopathic remedy is determined by its quantity in inverse ratio. And the homeopathic law of use. The dose and quantity that will thoroughly permeate the organism and make its essential impression upon the vital force is that which will affect the functional sphere of the individual. And he defined that early on in this chapter about functional is something that are the signs and symptoms, the signals and codes that we're going to notice before, in your observations of illness, before it becomes pathological, before the structure changes, you're going to have function first as the being the most effective. Then we have the homeopathic law of biological development. The function creates and develops the organ. The function creates and develops the organ. So that's why we want to keep the function working properly, because that's what's going to help develop the organ. The homeopathic law of disease development, functional symptoms are produced by the vital force in exact proportion to the profundity of the disturbance. Functional symptoms precede structural changes. And that's what we just did, mentioned a moment earlier. So everything has this proportion, a balance. And if you look at a scale, everything needs to be balanced in order for it to be functioning smoothly the way it should. The homeopathic law of proving: any drug which in its natural state affects the vital energy only a little bit will develop a proving only in a high potency. So that you can see that reverse function. So you see it says, if the drug in its natural state is not going to do very much to the individual, to the function of the individual, then you're going to only, when you're doing a proving of that remedy, you're going to need a high potency to get it some action, to see some observation, because the lower potencies are not going to show very much. Then it says the homeopathic law of proving: any drug which in its natural state disturbs the vital energy to functional manifestations only may be proven in a potentized form. So you can see in a potentized, maybe proven. So this is kind of like a warning or a danger sign. So let's say we take a neurotoxin, we take Lachesis, something that is from snake venom, and we know that that in its natural state is going to disturb the vital force to a great degree to functional manifestations. And what he's saying is, you don't give it to prove as it is straight from the snake. You need and must, it's required to potentize it so that it will not be a harmful substance into the body. And this maybe explains one of the reasons why all of the ingredients in vaccinations are so harmful and potentially dangerous, because those things like formaldehyde and mercury and all of the other ingredients are going to cause functional manifestations in their crude natural state. Therefore, you must potentize them in order to prove them. The homeopathic law of proving, where it says any drug which in its natural state disturbs the vital energy to destructive manifestations, should be proven only in potentized form. So maybe what I should have done is use that Lachesis example for the destructive manifestations, and think of something that we could say like goldenrod, what might have been the functional manifestations. When a person is allergic to goldenrod, or a person is highly allergic to peanuts, that might be that rule number two. What it is in a natural state disturbs the functional manifestations may only be proven in a potentized form, but that which is going to be destructive in its natural form, that should be proven only in its potentized form. So I make those corrections. The homeopathic law of repetition: never repeat the dose while symptoms are manifest from the dose already taken. I'm just checking in to see if anybody is with us here. The chat is open, and I'm happy to take callers and talk with you. Probably everybody is either traveling today for Thanksgiving, or in the kitchen cooking, or cleaning up the house, or going shopping, getting ready for this holiday. But I'm going to be here doing just this 1 hour. The homeopathic law of repetition: never repeat the dose while symptoms are manifest from the dose already taken. And this means that this is why we must be patient, and we must just allow the action, the full and complete action of the initial dose or whatever dose you're on, to manifest itself and show the law, Herring's law of direction and force and movement, that you're going to want to get the full range in the natural sequence of events before you give another dose. Then the homeopathic law of repetition for cure. So the first one was the homeopathic repetition for provings: don't repeat if you're still getting some action from the first dose. But then the repetition of cure law is never repeat your remedy so long as it continues to act. And that is very, very similar. We're ready to move on to chapter number 7, The Principles and Art of Cure by Homeopathy, written by Dr. Herbert A. Roberts. He says, in our thesis that homeopathy is fundamental, that it is scientific, and that it is based on natural law, we have quoted findings from other branches of pure science that have been so uniform and constant as to definitely point the way toward underlying laws. These, to recapitulate briefly, were toward these laws from astronomy, mathematics, and biology, and have been compared with the closely similar findings of the action of drugs and their application in states of health to produce artificially conditions simulating disease, that's one, or two, to restore disease states to the normal balance of health. So to say that again, using astronomy, mathematics, biology, we have compared closely the similar findings of the action of drugs and their application, both in states of health to produce artificially conditioned simulating disease, which we call provings, or to restore disease states to the normal balance of health. And that's just using the homeopathic potentized remedies. Let us consider once more some of our deductions set forth in former chapters on the vital energy in its universal application, that we may have it before us for examination in comparing our deductions from other branches of scientific investigation with our study of the natural laws underlying the principles adapted for use in the science of healing. We call it homeopathy. Quote from these chapters, these substances capable of being raised by potentization are derived from three kingdoms, mineral, vegetable, animal. We cannot definitely say that the mineral substances in themselves possess vital energy, but they are fragments of that which compose the earth, our planet, and that this planet either possesses some form of vital energy in itself, or it is susceptible to being activated by vital energy to such an extent that it performs its appointed movements according to the law. And we can use these minerals by proper preparation in the form of vital energy, not to perpetuate life, but to influence it on all three planes, the body, mind, and spirit, that the vital energy of the individual may be thereby guarded against decay and death. And he's saying, we're not going to be immortal. We're not going to live forever, but we can guard against unnatural decay and death. We recognize the presence of vital energy in vegetable growth, for it is evidenced in growth and development on the plant, according to the natural law of development. We comprehend most easily the animation, the presence of vital energy in the animal kingdom. And that was a quote from previous chapters. He goes on to say, it is quite within the province of the homeopathic physician, especially if he believes that homeopathy is based on the fundamental principles underlying all elemental construction and development, to attempt to understand something of the basis of the elements with which he has to deal, both in states of sickness and in state of health. This implies a knowledge of drugs, not only their action, but their derivation, and this not in superficial terms, but in terms of basis, derivation, and interrelation with universal construction. This deals with physics in a very definite way, and in a much deeper, more constructive and significant way than we usually consider. I wonder what he's getting at here. In his little book called Science and the New Civilization, Millikan gives us some valuable hints in his chapter on available energy. His statement in this chapter is that all knowledge that helps towards an understanding of the nature of the universe of which we are a part is useful, for we need very much more of it than we now have, or shall have for centuries to come, to enable us to direct our energies toward wise, effective living instead of wasting them on beating tom-toms, inventing perpetual motion machines, or chasing either physical or social rainbows. Wow. So Millikan basically is saying shooting for the moon is something like wasting our time. We're not doing something that's going to be effective, and we're not going to be gaining enough to make it worthwhile, basically, is what he's saying. Dr. Roberts says, if it be wise for the average person to direct their energies towards an understanding of things about them, then how much more is it the province of him who is entrusted with the care of others through the use of drugs, building up and potentizing out of the elements? So he's basically saying we really should be looking toward the energies that are here on Earth to help people with their health if we understand the basic principle and law that within the minerals, the plants, we have hidden within them a vital energy force, a dynamic force, which has the potential to help people prevent decay and death. Let us consider some further Dr. Millikan's statement in this chapter and their bearing on our specialty, because he's targeting and speaking directly to physicians, those in the medical field, and potential students of homeopathy. He says, it is interesting and very important fact from the practical viewpoint, too, that more than 95% of this universe, so far as we can now see, is made up of very few elements. First, the spectroscopy of the heavens shows the enormous prevalence everywhere of hydrogen, but hydrogen is merely the primordial positive and negative electrons tied together or in process of being so tied. Second, he has the spectroscopy of the heavens also shows that helium is an exceptionally abundant and widely distributed element, even though because of its lightness and inability to combine with anything, even with itself, helium won't combine with itself easily, the Earth has not retained much of it. Significant is it is, however, that the alpha particle given off by all the heavy radioactive elements is nothing but helium, so that it must have a certain prevalence even on Earth in the structure of the heavier elements. So he's saying hidden within the heavier elements, such as radioactive elements, there is a helium component. Third, he says, Dr. I.S. Bone of the California Institute solved with consummate skill, the half-century-old riddle of nebulium, and has shown that the substance abundant throughout the heavens, giving rise to these mysterious spectral lines, is mainly oxygen and nitrogen. But oxygen alone constitutes 55% of the Earth's crust and about the same proportion of meteorites. Oxygen and nitrogen, then, which for our present purpose will be treated as one element since they have nearly the same atomic weight, he's talking about oxygen and nitrogen, and will be henceforth listed under the name of the stronger brother, constitute the third extraordinarily abundant element. And it is to be noted that there are no abundant elements at all between helium and oxygen. Carbon has a certain minor nitrogen and oxygen. It might here be treated as merely a feeble satellite to oxygen. It's all very interesting to me because I know that we consider we are carbon, we people, and everything is carbon. Number four, he says, fourth, is 95% of the weight of all meteorites consists of oxygen, 54%, magnesium, 13%, silicon, 15%, iron, 13%, while 76% of the Earth's crust is composed of the three elements, oxygen, 55%, silicon, 16%, and aluminum, 5%. No other element rising over 2%. Iron constitutes 1.5% of the crust of the Earth, but it is supposed to be very largely represented in the interior. Because of the closeness of their atomic weights, magnesium, aluminum, and silicon, 24, 27, and 28, may, for our present purpose, be regarded as a single element and given the name of the stronger brother, silicon. There are, then, no abundant elements whatever between oxygen and silicon, nor between silicon and iron, the atomic weight of 56. And from an engineering standpoint, the universe may be said to be made up of the primordial positive and negative electrons and of four elements built out of them, namely helium, oxygen, silicon, and iron. Mankind, if he is here a billion years hence, will be satisfying his main needs as he satisfies them now with the four elements, hydrogen, oxygen, silicon, and iron. For instance, with water, earth, air, earth, and iron, where the last symbol, Fe, stands for iron rather than for fire, which was the fourth constituent of the world of the ancients. To comprehend the action of our remedies is well to look somewhat to the sources from which our remedies are derived and to weigh their possible activity in their natural state. We regard the sources of drugs as lying in three distinct groups: animals, vegetables, and minerals. Or we may take two classifications and say living and non-living. Sir J.C. Boss, in his Plant Autographs and Their Revelations, writes, quote, "Do not the two sets of records of the living and non-living tell us of some property of matter common and persistent? Do they not show us that the same kind of molecular upset on stimulation occurs on both the inorganic and the living, that the physiological is closely connected with the physical, that there is no abrupt break, but a uniform march of law, the dust particle and the earth, the plant and the animal are all sensitive? Thus, with an enlarged cosmic sense, we may regard the million orbs that thread their path through space as something akin to organisms having a definite history of their past and an evolutionary progress for their future." And again, Bose, B-O-S-E, J.C. Bose, in Plant and Autographs of Their Revelations, says, "In pursuing investigation on the border region of physics and physiology, I was amazed to find boundary lines vanishing and points of contact emerge between the realms of the living and non-living. Metals are found to respond to stimuli. They are subject to fatigue, stimulated by certain drugs, and killed by poisons." And so he was amazed to find some kind of connection between living and non-living. And it was the way that they responded and behaved. Excuse me. "For the purpose of convenience, however, we may divide drugs or substances from which homeopathic medications are prepared into the three classes of animal, vegetable, and mineral or elements. We expect to find the highest form of living activity in animals. We have been taught to expect strong reaction to the various forms of defense of individual species of animal life. Thus, we find the venom of snakes has a deep action on other forms of animal life. We deduce that even when venom is prepared in minute reaction on animal life," Sir J.C. Bose has verified this in his experiments with the action of cobra venom, we call nausea, on animals and plants. He found that in doses of 0.5 cc of solution of venom, one part in a thousand, when injected into the vein of a fish, the heart stopped beating in 12 minutes. This action was automatically recorded on delicate instruments. The same experiments were next applied to the plant. A solution of 1% was used. A great depression was first recorded. Then the pulse beat came to a permanent stop. Then came wilting and decomposition. It is hardly necessary to go into the data available for further proofs of the activity of snake venoms. Our homeopathic provings, preceded by many years, the acknowledgement of the allopathic school that venoms in minute doses were exceedingly efficacious in many serious conditions, especially those showing great derangement of the vascular and nervous systems. The forms of defense, such as spider venoms, sepia cuttlefish, the stings of bees and of insects, and many other natural weapons, have been found effective in causing and treating bodily discomforts and may not be denied by those who have observed their action. Thus, we may pass on to a consideration of plant life as a source from which we may expect to derive useful remedies. We expect and find great reaction from all those growths which manifest in their natural states the power of protection through defense by poisonous properties. Thus, we find all members of the rhus of the poison ivy, poison oak family, Rhus toxicodendron, exceedingly active both in their crude state and in potentized form, affecting strongly the human organism in countless ways. The list of plants that strongly affect the human organism ranges through all forms, from the form that approaches the animal development in their power of capturing and devouring insects, such as the Drosera and the Saracena purpurea plants, and to the lowliest and hardiest growths, such as Sticta pulmonaria, and is almost endless. To do more than glance at the long list of possibilities that open to the homeopathic physician through his source would be a task too long for one chapter. We may take ourselves at once to the observation of those substances that may be most truly said to be non-living, yet which must enter largely into the composition of the living and that encompass it. And I thank any of the guests who are listening to today's show. We're reading chapter 7 from Dr. Herbert Close and the principles and art of cure and why our remedies act. We're learning about the elements and their vital force that's within them. We're learning about the power of animals, minerals, elements, and now plants, and that we can obviously see in their, those that are in their crude form, which have a great power, can also in a potentized form, based on the principles and laws of cure, also must be potentized in order not to harm. Even more deeply acting than the venoms from the snakes and the insects, we find the mineral and chemical elements. Plant life, through its power of simplifying these substances more readily, form the closest relationship to the mineral kingdom. For here the elements are often absorbed and made available for ingestion, even and make them even more active. So that's why we need to eat our plant life to sustain and provide nutrition for us, and so do all the other animals that eat plants, because they have absorbed and retained the vital nutrition from the earth as they grow. Thus, we see the reasons for remedies like pulsatilla. It has a strong action on the human economy. Dr. Underhill tells us that pulsatilla, the windflower, is one of the most effective chemical laboratories known, assimilating the mineral content and elements in the soil and rebuilding it into a most deep-acting and complicated influence upon the human organism. The most cursory glance at the chemical elements of our most common plant remedies must reveal how deeply bound these are to the chemical elements of light weight, far below the atomic weight of those known to be radioactive, and these may be classed as those written by Milliken, who I quoted earlier, to quote again. And if you think about it, we've got in today's world a problem with radioactivity from fallout from Fukushima, and we're learning that there are plants in the world that will help to clean that up, one of them being the sunflower. For the great majority of the elements, states Milliken, such as constitute the bulk of our world, are in their state of maximum stability already. They can only be broken apart by working upon them or by supplying energy to them. Man can probably learn to disintegrate them, but will he always do it by the sweat of his brow? Basically what he's saying, the way that a plant works on the earth and absorbs and breaks down the minerals and makes it useful, can man do that simply by taking the mineral, crushing it up into a powder and giving it to us? It's not really the same thing. We're not really getting the same vital energy, force, and potentized nutrition and even spiritual force from the plant from the mineral if we just take something out there, lime or whatever it is, and crush it up into a fine powder and eat it. You're not going to be able to absorb it in the body. It's maybe even going to cause stones or something because the body doesn't know what to do with it. However, the body does naturally know what to do and retain the good nutrition from a plant life. So Milliken says, by having thus disposed of the process of atomic disintegration and found it completely wanting as a source of available energy, since the radioactive elements are necessarily negligible in quantity, because remember he said that the heavy metals are also part of the earth, and yet we know that radioactivity can be harmful, so he's saying that when we get it through the plant, it's negligible. Let us next see what there is to be learned about the process of atom building as a source of energy. Milliken goes on, the recent experimental work on cosmic rays have just thrown a flood of light on the process going on in this universe in which we live. For first, Dr. Cameron and I have recently found three definite cosmic ray bands or frequencies of penetrating powers or ray energies, respectively, about 12, 50, and 100 times the maximum possible energies that are or can be obtained from any radioactive, that is, any disintegrating process. So he's equating radioactivity with a disintegrating process. The highest frequency band has so enormous a penetrating power that it passes through more than 200 feet of water or 18 feet of lead before becoming completely absorbed, while 2 or 3 inches of lead absorbs the hardest gamma rays. This discovery of a banded structure in cosmic rays shows that these rays are not produced, as are X-rays, by the impact upon the atoms of matter of electrons that have acquired large velocities by falling through powerful electric fields. As we earlier suggested, the fields necessary to produce frequencies as high as those of the highest observed cosmic rays are equivalent to 216 million volts, but that they are rather produced by definite and continually recurring atomic transformations involving very much greater energy chances than any occurring in radioactive processes. And I cannot believe that I have been talking for an hour, and there is a little bit more to this chapter if we wish to finish it. And so we will continue for another couple of minutes here if it will continue. So, taking Einstein's equation and Aston's curve as a guide, there are no possible atomic transformations capable of yielding rays of the enormous penetrating power observed by us, except those corresponding to the building up or creation of the abundant elements like helium, oxygen, silicon, and iron out of hydrogen, or possibly in the case of the last two elements of the helium. we have arrived at pretty definite evidence that the observed cosmic rays are the signals broadcast throughout the heavens of the bursts of the common elements out of positive electrons. Thus, we find that in the birth of, say, two of our common earth elements, iron and silicon, and let me see if I can update if it's possible. I think that I'm not sure that we're still recording here today, but we shall see in a moment. I'm going to go back into my account to find out what's going on with today's show and see if we're still running. I think we are. So I would just like to finish up this chapter for us. And thus we find that in the birth of, say, two of our common earth elements, iron and silicon, we find tremendous powers liberated in the heavens. For convenience, Millikan in this article speaks of magnesium and aluminum. And remember that aluminum is a big element in our vaccinations today. As coincident with silicon, and because of their close atomic weights. We all know their effectiveness when energy is released by long trituration and powerful succussion. Chemical analysis of some of our common plant remedies reveals the presence of one or more of these common earth elements assimilated, broken into a form that supplies life energy to the plant. We find in a cursory examination of Lycopodium clavatum that has a powerful effect upon animal tissue and animal energy when its powers are released by reducing it to the form of the homeopathic potency. Consider, I say, its profound effect after its assimilation by the plant. Its energies there partially released for effective reaction, and that in turn undergoing a further breaking up and disintegration by the processes of trituration and potentization. So he's telling us that the earth contains these powerful elements, iron and silicon, magnesium and aluminum, and when the plant that has the power to assimilate these common elements is taken as a medicine, as a drug, as triturated and potentized, crushed and potentized to a higher energy level, that when it is given to a person, it has a profound effect. The history of Lycopodium or Lycopodaceae may be of still further interest in giving us the reason for its effectiveness. Among the old forms of life, those forms which have existed longest upon the earth, and Lycopodium being a moss, one of the oldest on the rolling stones, that is, we find on the mosses, and though this family is a hardy member. So because it has been around for so many centuries, that it means, and it survived and it's still here, it's a very strong and effective cure-all. It is probably one of the oldest living forms of earthy plant life, that is, dependent both upon the soil and the water. It has persisted past all changes in circumstances and conditions, and this probably has changed its form less to meet changing conditions than almost any other form of life, except possibly the equisetum plant, another of the early surviving forms. This tenacity of life, adapting itself to circumstances without conforming, bespeaks a tenacity of energy that, when released, must powerfully affect that which it touches. Equisetum hymenali contains silicon, in the form of oxide and magnesium. In analysis, the amount of silicon may range from 7.5% to 41.2%. If at their birth these elements register such tremendous energy as the cosmic waves reveal, what effectiveness, and I want to just check here, what effectiveness must we expect when it has been assimilated, broken down, first in plant life and then by trituration and potentization, even in minute quantities? When animal, vegetable, or mineral substances are potentized, they are rendered more potent because of the breaking up, disintegration of thin atomic relationships that place them in a form where they act directly upon the dynamic force of the individual. That is, in their disintegration, their energy is liberated by releasing the radioactive power. Through the radioactivity exerting itself upon the vital energy of the individual, the potency is made effective. Thus, we are forced to recognize different forms of energy, the discharge of different energies or rays from what we have considered as inanimate metals and elements. We find that they respond energetically in much the same way as plants and animals. Not only in their simple states do we find this response, but again and again as they are assimilated, broken down, and rebuilt in different forms of life. From the simple assimilation and complicated rebuilding of the plant to the profound reaction on all living substances when they are in potentized form. We recognize that elements have high atomic weights, with having high atomic rates, are radioactive. They give off spontaneously rays of different velocity and penetrating power. And in their radioactivity, their dissemination of energy, they are themselves changed. Einstein expresses this change when he says, the change of mass equals the change of energy. As they vary, energy vanishes with the mass, and so they are equal. Unquote. Mass, in this sense, does not mean bulk, as we commonly think of it. It is rather the sum total which gives off energy in some form of its part. As in mathematics, that which remains after subtraction is not as great as before. One cannot go on subtracting without coming to the end of that from which we could subtract. Thus, we see that uranium or thorium, after having discharged its rays for a long period, is so changed that we recognize it as radium. Radium, in turn, after exhausting a certain degree of its radioactive powers, becomes lead. For instance, we know that uranium, being the heaviest element, would be number 92 in the scale of atomic numbers, with an atomic weight of 238.14. Thorium, number 90, has an atomic weight of 232.12 and is so similar in some phases of its nature to uranium that it is also a source of radium. It stands in the atomic scale as 88 with an atomic weight of 225.97. Lead has an atomic number of 82 with an atomic weight of 207.22. The differing atomic weights of these substances demonstrate Einstein's statement regarding the change of mass equaling the change in energy. We have spoken before about homeopathy and its relationship to fundamental laws. And this chapter is an attempt to set forth further deductions on that basis. Thus, we comprehend that every step toward understanding of the working of the natural laws brings us to a clearer vision of a few basic cosmic laws. Fundamentally, few in number, but with a multiplicity of manifestations. The laws governing homeopathy are seemingly not closely associated with laws governing other forms of pure science. Yet, the knowledge is borne in upon us that this is one manifestation of that which is basic. It differs only in its manifestation and not in its essence. We must teach ourselves to discriminate between the multiple manifestations or applications of the law through differing forms, as they appear to causal observation and their essences, which are so closely similar as to lead us to question if they be not fundamentally identical. Sir J. C. Boss, or Bosi, from whose invaluable records we have quoted from time to time, quotes from ancient Hindu philosophy a throbbing vital truth to which every thoughtful homeopathic physician can subscribe and that he must heed, which states, "They who see but one in all the changing manifoldness of this universe, unto them belongs eternal truth, unto none else, unto none else." So it comes down to seeing the oneness in the universe and how all of these fundamental laws apply and are in relationship to homeopathy, to homeopathic principles and laws, and homeopathic practice. That is our reading for today, and it's going to be interesting to move along and to chapter number 8 next session and learning about taking the case. So this work is dedicated to all seekers after truth in healing of every age and race, and let us continue to seek the truth. Wishing everyone a blessed, happy, fruitful, and joyous, happy Thanksgiving, with lots of thanks to all of our listeners, to all of the homeopathic community, to those who support Homeopathy World Community and love the practice of homeopathy, who are out there talking and chatting on the world, on the internet, in their neighborhoods, at tea shops, at coffee shops, wherever they are, at family gatherings, talking about homeopathy and learning from each other. Sending lots of love and waves of awareness. Until next time, we will see you on Monday on the Health In Show. And I can tell you that we are going to be having a super guest, Sergio Butenko, who is going to talk about a vegetarian diet and how this has healed his diabetes. Thank you once again for listening, and I will end the show.
Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brock and Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when the show airs, and share with friends on Facebook and Twitter. Please send in your comments and questions, and we'll see you next time.